Welcome to TKG's Healthcare Insights, where we explore healthcare's critical issues, challenges, and trends with a focus on achieving the quadruple aim of enhancing patient experience, improving population health, reducing costs, and improving the work life of healthcare providers and staff. Thank you for joining us today. Welcome. We're glad to have you listening today. I'm Warren Smedley with the Kinetics Group, and today we will be taking a look at the challenges of managing complex cancer diagnoses and treatments with the help of genetic and genomic testing. Advancements in cancer therapies have improved tremendously, and we're moving towards more targeted or precision therapies. Many of the newer therapies are being designed to target specific genes within a cancer cell, which means that we need to test for those specific biomarkers to make sure that the target of the recommended therapy is actually present in the patient's cell. Today's special guest is a former colleague from the University of Alabama at Birmingham Health System, Megan Farmer. Megan is a master's trained genetic counselor and was the former director of the UAB Genetic Counseling Program. We work together to help provide genetic counseling services to the region as a part of the O'Neill Comprehensive Cancer Center at UAB. Today, Megan splits her time between taking care of patients at UAB and serving as the Genetic Clinical Operations Director for MyGene Council. MyGene Council is a digital health company serving patients and providers by bridging the gap between genetic testing and precision medicine by addressing the lack of accurate and timely genetic counseling information for patients and providers. Welcome, Megan. We're glad to have you here on our show today. Thank you.
Thanks, Warren. I'm really excited to be here.
My co-host today is Sarah Pugh, an oncology nurse and senior director with the Kinetics Group. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, thanks for having me, Warren, and it's so nice to speak with you today, Megan.
Megan, we're glad to have you here, and as a master's trained genetic counselor, you've shared a lot of concerns with me about the way that patients are being taken care of, where they're being managed, the way that we're looking at their genetic profile. Many people are getting profiles done now. We're doing that in order to target specific genes within specific cancer tumors with specific targeted medicines. So we're doing a lot of work with genetic profiling, with biomarkers, whole gene sequencing, all those things. And we've had some great conversations. You shared a great perspective that there may be some gaps in the way that this is all now playing out, some things we need to learn. So Megan, maybe you could kind of give us a little bit of background on what you've been doing, and then love to talk about what is genetic testing, what is genomic testing, and how does it all come together?
So starting out as a clinical genetic counselor, I was really only talking to patients about hereditary cancer genetic testing. So seeing whether someone might be born with an inherited predisposition to develop certain types of cancers or tumors. And as that progressed, we were seeing just an explosion in genetic testing where there are more tests to do, and it was easier for patients to qualify for that testing based on personal or family history. And we really struggled to meet the volume. So there just are too few genetic counselors for the old model of one-on-one visits with kind of a provider at an academic medical center. And so, you know, Warren, you and I worked a lot to increase telemedicine access to genetics. And I used to think that would solve many of these problems because if a person didn't have a genetic counselor locally that they could speak with about their hereditary cancer genetic testing, that they would be able to speak with a genetic counselor by telehealth. And it certainly did help. But at the end of the day, we couldn't clone genetic counselors. So we still weren't really meeting needs. And it just became more complicated as we did more tumor genome profiling or genetic testing of cancers for targeted treatment reasons, because sometimes there were certain insights there that we can get into more later that, you know, or a genetic counselor was necessary. So long story short, this problem has just been getting worse and worse. And I realized that technology was really needed to address some of these gaps. And so while I do still see patients part-time at UAB, my full-time role is with MyGene Council, which provides digital tools to try to address some of these gaps and kind of the old delivery models. And it might be helpful, again, to kind of back up and just explain hereditary versus tumor genome profiling. So I mentioned before, hereditary cancer genetic testing is looking at the genes someone is born with and seeing if there are certain pathogenic variants or mutations in any of those genes that would put them at increased risk for certain cancer types. And if we identify those pathogenic variants or mutations, we then say, what kind of cancers is this person at increased risk for based on this gene not functioning? What can we do to find that cancer earlier so that it's easier to treat or prevent or potentially to reduce the risk of those cancers? And then when we have a plan for that patient, we think about the whole family. Who else in the family is at risk? Who needs to be offered testing? And then kind of what kind of management plan should they have? So that was kind of the hat I wore for a long time. Tumor genome profiling is looking at the genome of tumors to see if there are specific pathogenic variants or mutations in genes that are targetable when it comes to therapy. And the types of testing we have on the tumor side are also kind of becoming more complex. But with all of them, you know, patients and oncologists are kind of grappling with complex information that they don't necessarily understand, and then that makes it hard to act on. And genetic counselors are being involved in that just because we're experts in translating complex genetic information.
It certainly seems like there's so much information available, it'd be hard for everybody to keep up with all that information.
You know, your comments about access are, I think, really important. I live in an area where you have within an hour drive time, and in some places even shorter, major academic medical centers. And when my daughter and I both went for genetic testing, we were on a waiting list for about 2.5 to 3 months. So I was really excited when Warren mentioned the telehealth option. So it's interesting to see that although it's helping, it's certainly not what it's going to take to solve the problem for a metropolitan area, let alone the more remote rural areas.
Megan, what are we looking for when we're doing these tests?
Well, on the hereditary side, you can think about gene sequencing as kind of like a spell check of genes. So we're looking for any misspellings or, you know, gene variations that would make that gene not function. So when I'm explaining this to a patient, you know, if I'm reading through a gene and I find a mutation or misspelling, it makes it not work. That's kind of like having one defense system down. And on the somatic or tumor genome profiling side, there's lots of different types of variation in gene we can be looking for. Maybe we're looking for single nucleotide variants, which is also called a point mutation. That's just when one nucleotide or kind of DNA base has been swapped for another, but it's enough to affect that gene's function. Or maybe we're looking for a small deletion or duplication, so a few letters in the DNA code that have been deleted or duplicated. Or maybe we're looking for copy number variants in the tumor, which are larger deletions or duplications of whole exons or even whole genes. Or we could be looking for structural variants, which could be kind of a swapping of chromosomes information. So within the same chromosome, or even maybe with breakpoints in different chromosomes. So there's many different ways genetic material can be affected in a way that would affect how a tumor acts and then therefore kind of how it could respond to different therapies. But beyond just the types of genetic variants we can look for, an oncologist is also thinking about kind of how broad a test to order. So on the hereditary or inherited side, which we also call germline testing, are we testing for just one genetic condition, or we look at one or two genes? Are we testing 30 genes that we know pathogenic variants have been found in associated with a certain type or two of cancer? Are we going really broad? Are we looking at 80 plus genes, some of which may not be really well understood? And then on the somatic or tumor genome profiling side, are we looking for a hot spot, a certain mutation we know happens really often in a particular cancer? So I think about melanoma, which has a common BRAF mutation that's targetable. So would you just start there with somebody? Or do you maybe look at a panel of a subset of genes that often have mutations in melanoma? Or do you, you know, sequence the whole exome or whole genome of a tumor? So there's a lot of decisions to be made and a lot of data to grapple with on the other side of that.
Now, you had mentioned in a previous conversation that some of that decision making is really influenced by payer policy. How do you get, when you're working with a patient and or a doctor's working with a patient and they're trying to order something, how frequently are they ordering a full panel genomic profile, or are they just ordering specific biomarker tests?
And, you know, I have the most experience on the germline side, and I would say some of that just depends on the commercial lab that someone is working with and kind of what their billing policies are like and kind of what workarounds have been put in place. Many of the larger multi-gene panels may still be considered investigational, even though most of those genes, there is NCCN guidance for not only risks but management. So it may be that we're ordering, let's say, BRCA testing for someone with ovarian cancer, but we're ordering BRCA testing along with a broader panel, knowing that that payer may only reimburse the lab for BRCA testing, but we really need the whole panel to make clinical decisions. And so, as always, you know, guidelines are a little bit behind sometimes what we have from a scientific standpoint. Payers are a bit behind the guidelines, and all of us are having to kind of struggle with that system to try to get the patients the information they need.
Have you seen any systems in place, whether it's through payers or providers, where patients who may have asked about testing, let's take breast cancer, for example, and it wasn't previously approved, turned around and the payer will now approve that testing? My mother-in-law, in fact, this is going on right now. She asked, it was probably about 8 or 9 years ago, about testing because they do have a very strong history of breast cancer in their family. And I imagine that it was several years ago that her payer switched and decided, okay, for this family history, we will cover it. I imagine there's a long lag time between when they start covering it and when the patient thinks to ask about it again. Have you seen any systems in place to help patients or providers identify those patients and bring them in sooner?
That's a great question. And as you could imagine, most payers aren't proactively saying, hey, we'll pay for more now. Right. They would usually prefer not to. So I've seen lots of patients who, you know, tried to get testing years prior, and the out-of-pocket cost that they were told to expect was in the thousands. Whereas now, even if someone doesn't have insurance coverage, the self-pay price may be around $250. So it's very different than it used to be. And, you know, coverage has gotten better. So I'm in some cases seeing people who are now getting genetic testing that couldn't get it before because of cost, or they're able to get broader testing than they had in the past, either because of cost in the past or because those genes just weren't available for testing at the time. I don't know of many ways on the health system side of kind of proactively reaching out, but I know my company, My Gene Counsel, it's not just about keeping patients up to date on sort of positive tests they've had in the past, but we can also reach out when someone who has had uninformative results in the past, they want to know about a new testing technology. So it's hard to go to talk about kind of how payers may be changing because every policy is different, but we could reach out to a patient and say, you know, you tested negative 4 years ago. Now we can do RNA testing in addition to DNA testing. So maybe your family's pathogenic variant or mutation could be found with this newer type of test, and you should talk with your provider about that. So we are using technology more now, but we certainly need to be creative about finding other solutions too.
That's great. Thank you.
Megan, with the explosion of information, in fact, we know from literature that medical information doubles about every 72 days. So the amount of knowledge that we have available to us is just exploding. And with that in mind, it sounds like the larger panels could be helpful in the future, but they also come with some inherent risks. And that is, you might find something incidentally. And you had mentioned previously that there is a gap out there around incidental findings and what to do with them. So could you talk about that for a minute? Tell us about what happens with incidental findings.
Sure. And I can talk first about it kind of on the tumor genome profiling side. So if you think about an oncologist who's ordering tumor genome profiling or somatic testing because they want extra information for making targeted therapy decisions, they're not thinking about hereditary genetics. That's not what's at the forefront of their mind. They may have a patient with refractory cancer, and they're just trying to figure out best treatment options. So they order maybe a panel of genes related to that particular tumor, or maybe sequencing of that tumor genome. And when the results come back and they see a list of mutations, they may first be thinking, well, all of those are just in the tumor because tumors have lots of mutations. That's why they act the way they do. But if that patient in front of them was actually born with a pathogenic variant or mutation in a gene, it's also going to show up in that tumor in many cases, only it's in all of their cells. It's not just in the tumor or cancer. And that would be important because it could be something targetable, but it could also mean that there's a hereditary reason for that patient's cancer. They could even be at risk for other types of cancer, and then there's a whole family suddenly that's at risk. And so though the oncologist may not have gone into that with that question in mind, if that is on the report, they need to know how to sort of see the clues that something could potentially be germline or hereditary. They need to know what the next step is. So how do you order hereditary testing to see if that truly is something in that person's germline and something that they are born with rather than just being in the tumor? And then how do you approach that with the patient? Not just at that point, but did you tell the patient during informed consent that, you know, this testing is mostly being ordered for the purpose of targeted therapy decisions, but we could actually find something that you were born with and it could affect your whole family? Very few oncologists are having that discussion with their patients. And in fairness, they haven't all been given good information about that or education on what to look out for. And some labs are better than others in highlighting that on the report.
This is something that you're doing with My Gene Counsel is really to bridge that gap. Have you seen that as a huge gap that physicians sort of in general are overwhelmed by the amount of information and may not really be able to spend the time they need to really understand all that?
Absolutely. I mean, think a busy oncologist can't keep up with everything there is when it comes to, you know, cancer treatment and also everything that there is when it comes to genetics. I have a full-time role in genetics and I can barely keep up without the help of technology. So this isn't so much a gotcha to talk about, you know, oncologists who are missing things, but really to highlight a problem that's not there to them either. We want them to feel confident ordering these tests because it's best for their patients. And how do they do that if they're not given the point of care information they need? So as I think about, you know, what My Gene Counsel does, we provide online information for patients and providers that explains what genetic test results mean and next steps. And so things like that are really needed so that the provider doesn't necessarily have to be an expert. And instead, we can put the information they need in their hands when they need it. And if they know that their patient is also going to get access to information written by experts, but at a patient level, then they can rest easy knowing that their patient has also kind of got true informed consent, understands what this means. And then the provider and the patient can have a really engaged discussion.
Okay, this has been a great discussion, but the conversation ran a little longer than usual, so we are going to press the pause button right here and split this great interview into two parts. We'll pick back up from this point in our discussion in part two. Megan Farmer is a great friend and colleague, and I appreciate her willingness to explore the gaps in patient care as they relate to genetic and genomic testing. In part two, Megan will discuss several key gaps in patient care, including how well patients understand what they are consenting to when getting a test, the need for long-term review of changes in medical knowledge that may impact a patient's initial findings, how public opinion and consumerism are affecting the demand for personal gene profiling, and some of the identified disparities that need to be addressed. Special thanks to Megan and Sarah for sharing their time and expertise with us today. Well, this wraps up another week of TKG's Healthcare Insights. Thank you for joining us. We welcome your suggestions, ideas, and requests for podcast topics of interest. Please email us at oncology@thekineticsgroup.com and write Insights Podcast in the subject line. Thank you. Have a safe and healthy day. You have been listening to TKG's Healthcare Insights, a program produced by the TKG Oncology team of the Kinetics Group. TKG Oncology empowers life science companies to effectively engage with health system and payer customers by developing strategies and real-world solutions aimed at impacting the right patient at the right time with the right care. We also work directly with health systems and payers to address the critical issues of our time. We would love to hear from you. Reach out to us at tkgoncology.com. Thank you for joining us today.